Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Welcome to Rewiring Your Life. I am your host today, Erica Spiegelman. My co-host Marcia Stone is not with us, but we have an incredible guest on. And, you know, we pride ourselves on creating shows that bring people inspiration, support, wellness tips, and interviewing people that are changing the world of wellness altogether on many levels. And today we have Eddie Bose, who is an LMFT and has a master's in clinical psychology. He has studied both modern and postmodern therapy and works to achieve the right blend of cognitive behavioral solution focus, narrative, psychodynamic, and family systems for each client he works with. He also is the director of behavioral health for BioCore RX, and he was the first mental health practitioner certified by BioCore RX. And BioCore RX is a counseling program that has the program for treatment centers from what I believe is 35 Keys to Sobriety. He'll tell us a little bit more about that. And he's currently also developing a new evidence-based cognitive behavioral program for them. So, Eddie, welcome to the show. So much is going on in your world. I just want to hear about how you got involved with BioCoreX and what you're doing in your own individual world of therapy. It sounds like you have maybe a private practice too. So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I do.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Okay, so you mentioned BioCoreX, and let me just start there. That I'm the director of behavioral health for this company called BioCoreX, and I've worked with them for about 6 years. And I was the first psychotherapist to be certified by the company to administer the client's 36-module CBT program, and it's called the 36 Keys to Sobriety. I think it used to be 35, and that might be what you have. I believe
It says 35 right on my bio, but yeah, that's good. 36.
Yes,
okay.
We're a growing company.
That's
We've
good.
By one.
Yeah.
but and as you said, I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I work in private practice in Los Angeles, and I work with individuals, couples, and families. I have a keen focus on couples therapy. I'm writing a book on couples therapy, but that's not my focus, I think, of being here today. Today, I just wanted to talk about primarily my work with BioCoreX because there's just some fascinating stuff going on in their industry.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, before I talk about myself and these modules, let me talk.
Yeah, let's talk about the company.
Yeah, this fantastic company that I work with. And so BioCoreX is a publicly traded pharmaceutical company that has developed a naltrexone implant that curbs cravings for alcohol and opiates. And this alone is amazing, but what's really wonderful about BioCoreX is that as a pharmaceutical company, by rights, they could merely be concerned with developing and selling their medication and leave it at that. They could just make their money off the meds and move on. However, in this company's wisdom and their humility, they understand that medication alone, it doesn't solve the addiction equation. So curbing the cravings is terrific, and it's a magnificent feat of science. However, what happens once the medication wears off?
Parallel to that, I mean, I have a private practice. I'm an addiction counselor, and so I see people that are on meds but don't have the coping skills. They don't understand their thought habits. They don't understand the family systems they've grown up in, the narratives that they have, and all of that really, happens with therapy and reading and being part of a program of some kind,
Exactly. So they understand that with this medication, if nothing changes in the patient's life or client's life or the way they approach their life, they run a high risk of returning to their substance of choice, right? So BioCoreX, in their desire to help the patient maintain sobriety beyond the time that their medication is in the client's system, they sought to help this client psychosocially as well. And the theory is, if meaningful change can happen while the patient is not experiencing cravings, by the time the medication sloughs out of the client's system, the client stands a great chance of maintaining sobriety and avoiding relapse. So I just wanted to point out that this is a really well-meaning company that cares about the person that they're offering medication to, and that they look at healing addiction holistically. Not just from their primary focus of being a pharmaceutical company selling their medication. So I just wanted to kind of address that, because that's a special part of this company. And obviously, I'm a mental health practitioner, so I wouldn't even be involved with them if all they wanted to do was sell this medication, right? So let me just get back. I'll get back to me and the company and how I fit in with the company. And my focus at the company is the mental health portion of helping clients attain and maintain sobriety after struggling specifically with alcohol and opiate addiction. That's what their proprietary blend of the naltrexone implant addresses. And I was originally brought in to work with patients using their 36-module program after these patients had received their naltrexone implants. And after years of working with patients in this capacity, I was asked to be their director of behavioral health. And since I've been helping the company further develop these modules and create other programs for other issues that I'd be happy to discuss later in our conversation. But so that's kind of BioCorrects and how I fit into it.
Yeah. No, I think that's wonderful. I'm just so curious about it because I feel like, you know, I have a book called Rewire that was published a couple of years ago. And so I'm a writer myself too. And I have 5 books published actually. And
terrific.
Jealous. Thank you. Don't be jealous. You're on your way. But it's just like, you know, it's funny because from my book came the Rewired program, which is an online program that I've created for people, modules as well, that, you know, trying to get treatment centers to use it if they want as a parallel to their own programs. And, you know, I just know that it's just curious, you know, it is very hard to break into centers to kind of get them to see that there is other things besides the 12-step program and like these very typical, you know, red flag, green flag groups and trigger groups. And there's more to it too. And I think it's just interesting that I think it's wonderful and interesting too that there's other people that are creating programs, because I think treatment centers in general need additional support and more material and more content and other ways of looking at sobriety and recovery and giving people different kinds of tools. And for a very long time, I just thought it was very almost like tunnel vision that these centers had, which is, you know, these certain groups and that's it, and meetings and that's it. And, you know, and so now I think it's expanding, which is really wonderful because every individual is different and people recover differently, you know, and I think the more tools and educational platforms that people can give, you know, us when we're recovering early on, the better. So I think it's fascinating that you guys are doing this too.
No, it's great. And having the weight of a publicly traded pharmaceutical company behind a psychosocial program with these modules is kind of unique. And look, any way possible to get the message out that there are other ways to look at sobriety other than strict psychotherapy or 12-step program, which are wonderful
right.
in their own rights, but that there are other
they
ways.
They are, yeah.
You know, like you said, every client is different, and these individuals, those kinds of programs, it may not resonate with certain individuals. So to have other programs out there that they can utilize, there's no harm in that. It's genius. It's all terrific. So
right. And let me ask you just a quick question about naltrexone and just medically assisted, you know, treatment. And in this industry, in our industry, I've been in this industry for 12 years and working at treatment centers all around LA as well. And, you know, there's been a lot of, not resistance to it, but, you know, families are confused by it. Even individuals that are trying to recover are hearing mixed messages, like that doesn't mean you're really sober if you're taking something, and if you, and then, you know, how are you going to get off of it? And, you know, and so again, it's an individualized decision everyone has to make. But my point is, can you tell us the benefits of maybe medically assisted for the right people out there that are confused by it, or family members that are wondering if it could help their loved one? Should they be looking at something like this? How long does someone have to be on it? Is there any info you can give our listeners?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think some of the resistance, confusion, we'll talk about that, right? Confusion about it. But resistance to it, I might surmise that it's because of kind of old school 12-step programs and psychotherapy that might believe the only way to truly have sustained recovery is to do it on your own because you really want to and you need to, and you pull yourself up from your bootstraps and you do it by yourself. And that is, there's nothing wrong with that ideology. That is a fantastic ideology for those who can do it. But to say that those who can't or are weak or inferior or losers in some way, you know, that, I don't see how that's helpful to society at large. So there's different strokes for different folks, and if certain individuals could utilize or benefit from medication-assisted treatment, I don't see the harm in it. And that if people say that there's harm in it, I'm just wondering how much they're holding on to some old school doctrine or ideology. You know, we're constantly evolving as human beings. We're constantly evolving societally, scientifically, medically. And, you know, we live in amazing times and we're in 2022. And why not utilize something that's out there that's there to help us and benefit a transition from addiction into some form of sobriety? So I just wanted to just address the resistance portion of it. In terms of the confusion, it's relatively simple, and I won't get into the science of it because that's not within my scope of practice, right? I'm a psychotherapist. BioCorrex has two really intelligent and knowledgeable medical directors, and you might want to have one or both of them on to explain the ins and outs on a molecular level of how this works.
I think people don't know what it is.
Very simple, mm-hmm. though, in terms of from your perspective and mine, BioCorrex, naltrexone, first of all, has been around for a long time, decades. It's not a mystery drug. It's not a brand new drug that's hot off the press. It in the past has been used orally or in liquid form injectably, and it was known as Vivitrol, or is known as Vivitrol. And so you would take these substances,
a Vivitrol shot.
Yeah. And you would take the naltrexone, capsules or the Vivitrol shot, and it curbs cravings for the time that this medication is in the system. It coats the receptors in the neurons that are responsible for receiving, the messages from the substance that you've been having or for cravings. And it dulls that sensation. And from what I understand, also curbs your ability to get high as well. So you don't have the cravings, and you can't really utilize using the substance anyway. It's not like old school medication that makes you sick if you drink or take an opiate. It just makes you not want to take it, not need to take it. But the issue that we found over the decades is that to rely on someone struggling with addiction, those cravings are terrible, right? They're nasty. If you're relying on that person to take pills daily or to show up for their Vivitrol injection every 3 to 4 weeks,
that's
a hit or miss proposition, right? It's not, they even can't kind of guarantee themselves that they're going to remember it, show up in that way.
So this implant.
And so this excellent drug is now not going to be in their system because they don't show up for the injection. They forget to take the pills, or they're resistant to the pill in some way or the injection. But what's great about this implant that they have created is it's a little 1-inch incision in the abdomen. It's inserted subcutaneously, and it stays in the system for a number of months and eventually, you know, dissolves out of your system. It doesn't need to be removed, and just sloughs out of the system, you know, like when you take vitamin C, even time release, you know, you take it, but eventually it sloughs out of your system. Well, this is something that's inserted subcutaneously in your abdomen and stays there for as long as it stays there, depending on your weight, your level of activity, your metabolism. It stays in there, curbing the cravings, and you don't have to remember to take the med. It's in there. So you don't have to rely on someone struggling with addiction to remember these things. So it's really fantastic. And so that's the medication side of it. So like I said, while this medication is in your system and you're not craving, you can work on the psychosocial aspects so that when the medication is gone from your system, you have all of these new coping skills in your life and set in place so that when the medication is gone, you don't fall back to your maladaptive behavior patterns. So that's kind of like the nutshell of it. And I hope I've answered your question. And if I haven't, please have follow-up.
You have. No, that's wonderful. No, I find that that's very helpful for people to hear to hear the reality of that all, and having something that's like implanted is just a little bit, one less thing to have to worry about. And, you know, it really helps people focus on building routine and creating those pathways in your brain that you really need to, but take some time. So this way you don't have to worry about, you know, actually going and getting something. It's so smart, and I'm happy that that's out there. I want to hear more about the company as well, but I just wanted to ask you, just as an individual, since you said that you have a strong focus in couples therapy and are writing a self-help book based on that. It said in your bio that there's reoccurring negative issues that you've observed. Is that what this is about? Is kind of, I'm just curious, what can you tell us if people are looking for help, you know, in the relationships, to, you know, what people can do to make sure that they, you know, are more proactive in having healthy habits as a couple, communication, like what is your theory behind this all? What is the book? You want to tell us just quickly about it?
Sure. The book's not complete yet, but what I have, being a male therapist, you know, working with couples, I have been kind of keenly interested and noticed a lot of the pitfalls that men seem to fall into when in relationships, whether they're married, long-term partnership relationships. I found that there were these recurring issues in men that if they had the interest, and that's a whole societal issue, we can talk about men's perspective of psychotherapy, because I have my own theories on that. But if I could get these men who seem to be struggling with the same issues,
which are what? Can you share like one or two? Or,
well, first of all, I think societally, men are raised differently from females, and I don't want to be too gender biased or.
But you're right. There is. There's just a different narrative.
So,
yeah.
Boys are raised under the ideology of big boys don't cry.
Don't cry.
Don't talk
right.
about your emotions.
Of course. Yeah.
Don't show them you're in pain on the football field. Stiff upper lip. You know, all of these kinds of things, to where we are not trained as boys to have an emotional IQ. Just not. You know, when little boys get together, they run outside, they look at each other. What do you want to do? You want to climb that tree? That's about the extent of the conversation, right? Whereas girls are raised differently. Girls from a very early age. Now, this is stereotypical, so please forgive me. Not all girls are raised this way. But in general, in the past, at least in my youth, you know, girls were given dolls to play with. They were taught to be nurturing. The girls get together and they talk a lot. About things,
right? Right. How they feel.
Boys don't
right,
do that,
right? Right.
Right. And so girls aren't. Girls are raised to have a higher emotional IQ and to value that and to need that and want that. So what we do is we raise these two genders separately from 0 to 18, and at 18 we put them together and say good luck.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's not a good. It's not a good recipe.
Yeah, I love it.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of guys will come into therapy with me, and if you work with couples as well, I'm sure you've encountered this, where a lot of men will say, if she just have sex with me more, all of our problems would go away. And I get that a lot, and I love it, because then I can turn to this gentleman and say, well, Bob, why do you think she's not having sex with you more regularly? And we can immediately start diving into the differences.
Her emotional needs are being met. Right.
Exactly. Right. And how a woman may be more emotionally stimulated sexually, whereas a man is more visually stimulated sexually. And how that, you know, if you're not getting it right on that level, how that's a microcosm for how you may not be getting it right in the relationship at large. And I feel that men are deficient in certain ways in this area. However, what this book is about is, as I pitched some of my concepts that I haven't yet shared with you about this book to my female colleagues, they're like, you know, a lot of women struggle with some of these other things that you're talking about, and why limit this just to men? You might want to open this book up to both sexes. And so that's what I've been endeavoring to do, which is why the book isn't finished yet, is because it shifted from being just a self-help book for men to a self-help book for both men and women in relationships.
Yeah, I agree. I think you know, when I was just reading that, and why I wanted to ask you what it's about is because I feel like, as someone who's married, number one, but number two, I work with couples and I hear this a lot, you know, as women, it's good for us to understand too, how, you know, like you're saying, not all men think in a certain way and act in a certain way, but the majority, it's good for women to also have the awareness with what their partners, you know, may be going through or how they're thinking, and don't have the courage, or they're too vulnerable, or they don't want to ask, seem like a nag, you know, whatever their narrative is, to actually know, to have a book where you could say, like, this is what most men struggle with, or, you know, this is something that comes up more often than not in couples therapy, you know, is, I think, very fascinating for women to read. I would definitely read something like that to kind of figure out the world of men, you know, what's going on in their heads. Even though I have male clients where I do narrative groups all the time, and that's all I hear is, like, I said, what's your narrative around being a man when you were raised? You know, what did you hear in your household? You know, same thing. Don't cry, you know, this, that, you know, all the same stuff that you're saying. It's very common. I hear the same thing too. And that doesn't apply to all men. And certainly not all men are the ones initiating sex. Sometimes women initiate sex and men don't want to have sex.
Of course.
You know, so this is, but I think it's fascinating for a woman to read something like this. So I think that's a good.
Right. And I'm just speaking in our conversation to the kind of the generalized prototypes. Right?
Yeah, yeah, of course. Me too.
There are many men who have really high emotional IQ, and there are women who don't. And there are women who initiate sex, and there are men who aren't the ones who are doing that. But, you know, what basically, though, the premise of this outside of that is, I really explore what I call generosity and curiosity in a relationship.
I like
the log line for the book is, what I feel is, the honeymoon period ends when generosity and curiosity ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like especially when I was looking at this from a male perspective, that men at some point in general stop being generous. And when I say generous, like, a lot of guys in my practice will say, hey, I'm generous, I pay for everything. It's like, no, there's a financial currency, but there's also an emotional currency out there. And that emotional currency needs to be addressed. And I would imagine you don't have any money in this emotional bank right now. In fact, you're not even at zero.
Right.
You owe this bank. And you got a lot of work to do just to get back to zero. So this emotional generosity and emotional curiosity kind of dries up at some point in the relationship. And I used to just blame men for this. And I'm starting to see from my colleagues kind of nudging me to look at it from the female's perspective. I just think both of us,
they
give up. And why does it have to stop? Why does generosity, or why does a honeymoon period, why does that term even exist? Why do we have to have a honeymoon period? And what's stopping it from having legs and continuing into the future? My theory is emotional generosity, really putting time into your partner on an emotional level. If that doesn't dry up, we stand a great chance of extending that honeymoon period.
Isn't it?
And if curiosity about your partner, I think that does the same thing.
Yeah. But don't you have to be mindful about this? Like, you know, just as you do when you're recovering from anything in life, like, you have to have a routine, right? You have to have an awareness. You have to be making it a priority, almost a non-negotiable, right? Just as we do to uphold our sobrieties, right? Or uphold a healthy lifestyle, and you've lost weight, like, whatever it is that you're going through. I think just having this commitment to awareness, commitment to being mindful, commitment to the soil that your house sits on, in a sense, as a couple, and knowing that that has to be a priority, and agreeing upon that, and talking about it, I feel like it almost should be routined, in a sense, the conversation around it. But I know it just, you know, people have work and kids, and it literally just gets lost, and it becomes the last thing. Yeah.
And that was the thing, in theory, that got you together. So the thing that got you together, that wooed the other person, it's counterintuitive to think that's the one thing that I can let go and I'll just focus on everything else.
Right?
It doesn't make sense, but we all do it. Yeah. I do it.
Right.
We all do it.
We get complacent and comfortable because you think this person's not leaving. I married this person's not leaving. I've heard my husband say that, like, I don't need to do that. I'm married to you now. And I'm like, are you joking? Like, he's joking because I'm right. The one that keeps this in a conversation. I'm like, no matter what, we're always going to connect this way. I'm not allowing that to fall out. You know, like, it's, we're not doing that. But I'm in this field and I'm, you know, this is what I do all day long. Is
right. And I just want to say, in my denigration of my sex, I just want to say that when it comes to generosity and curiosity and emotional IQ, I do feel like men have enough emotional IQ to be generous and curious. Because when are men, when do we exhibit that? When we're wooing a female,
so you
we
have
tend
it.
To be extremely generous and curious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. When we want it, when we're trying to seduce it, to get it to come to us, we have the ability. So that's why I think a book like mine could take root, because I know guys are capable of it. Just societally, we aren't trained to have sustained focus in that field. We only do it when we want to get the girl. And a lot of times, once we got her, we fall off. But I do think females can be equally guilty of this. I think both of us get guilty with the things that you just cited, which is the everyday life stuff, especially when kids come. And if both husband and wife are working and, you know, that takes its toll on the marriage or the relationship, it gets lost, but it's the one thing that can't be lost.
Yeah, no, it's true. Right. It's the most important. It's the most important. Yep.
So that's what this book is kind of focusing on, and how to bring that back to see if the honeymoon period can kind of be reinvigorated.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to read it. I'm a fan already.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
No, I love it. Yeah. You know, let's talk about the modules and the things that, like, if anyone's listening that runs programs or that works for programs or, you know, just interested in the 36 Keys to Sobriety, what does that entail? Just tell us a little bit more about that. And then I would like for you to tell everybody where to find the company and you, and, you know, if they need to reach out for any reason.
Well,
yeah.
Sure. So the 36 Keys to Sobriety, they're a CBT program that BioCorrex has developed, and their master's level addiction specialists have identified 36 major triggers and traps that a person struggles to attain and maintain recovery. It's what they struggle with in order to keep their desire for sobriety going.
And, can you share some of those, or so they could?
Absolutely, yeah. I can. I'm more than happy to. Before I share some with you, let me just say that these modules help the client recognize the trigger or the trap and be constantly mindful of its appearance in their lives before the trap can overtake them and they succumb to relapse. And the module addresses improved and healthy coping skills, and so that the client can adopt rather than falling back to their old maladaptive behavior patterns and using the substance of choice that got them in trouble to begin with. But so with these modules, there are 36 of them. They are numbered, but they're not numbered in order of importance or in order of which they should be administered. We have peer support specialists, which is something else that is fantastic that this company offers, or the therapist. They can move through these 36 modules in the order that makes most sense to the client. And I'll give you some just quick examples of some. Module 1 identifies a clean, safe, and sober household as a staple for maintaining sobriety and early recovery, and how it's a must. It highlights how a patient must take ownership for this, and it explores the problems that occur when a patient does not afford this for themselves, and then goes on to discuss ways of securing this kind of living environment for themselves. And, you know, it examines, like, for example, who do we live with? Are they clean? Does the living environment provide the sights and sounds and smells of their using days? Drugs, paraphernalia, beer mugs, drinking glasses, are they present? If they are, they must go. This particular module just helps the patient identify things that prevent a household from being truly clean, and how, if it isn't, this could tempt relapse. And we have, I'll just jump to what would be another module 7.
Give us one more.
Explores faulty belief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it It explores faulty belief systems and how these beliefs ultimately lead the patient to using a substance. And it then explores how to reauthor these faulty belief systems into something healthier and more accurate. And again, the modules highlight a problem and then explores the solution to the problem. And but the bottom line is these modules are simple and they're concrete and they're clear and they break down traps and triggers and identify key concepts in maintaining sobriety in a very straightforward and uncomplicated way so that they can resonate with a patient or client newly in recovery. And it's so vital with medication-assisted treatment, it's so vital to have these concepts in place so when the medication is no longer in the client's system, they have new protocols in place to make healthier choices.
No, can people find these modules? Do they have to be part of a treatment center? Can they do this if they're let's say they went to a treatment center, they're just listening right now, they've been sober 2 months, they're thinking about this implant, like do they have access to as individuals or do they have to, is this only for treatment centers?
Right now, my understanding of it is these modules are embedded with the program with the implant, but they, so right now you would contact BioCorrex and if you have a desire to explore an implant, that would be the steps that you would take to kind of have access to these modules. But in the long term, these modules were designed to be used as a standalone mm-hmm. for a therapist and client,
or even
could
to use
be
them.
Self-directed yeah, by yeah. the client. Yeah, but right now these modules are attached to BioCorrex and their and the.
Okay, just the curious in case someone's wondering. That, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. But
awesome. They sound wonderful.
If anyone has more information, more questions about that in particular, they're welcome to contact BioCorrex. They can also contact me directly, and I'm happy to kind of troubleshoot for them.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Eddie. Okay. Can you tell everyone then where to find you, where to find BioCorrex? If anyone has questions, wants to look into this and, you know, give everybody the information.
BioCorrex has their own website and, forgive me, but I don't have that website up in front of me, but I believe it should be on.
I have it. It's www.biocorrx.com. We'll also have it up on our podcast
right.
webpage. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that would be a way to contact them directly, to contact me at my private practice. Which I can then facilitate them over to BioCorrex if that's what they're interested in. My number's 818-304-5004. If I don't answer, it just means I'm in session and I will get back to them ASAP and more than willing to play interference on any questions they may have.
That's amazing. Great. It's what an awesome, amazing company that is changing the landscape of recovery. So this is just wonderful information for our audience. And you've been a pleasure and so lovely to talk to. So thank you so much for coming on, Eddie. And I'm happy we're connected now. And I know that you're out
Absolutely.
There. Yeah. Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for your questions. I really appreciate the questions and the time.
Yeah.
It was so great to get to chat with you.
At the end of our show, we like to ask our guest one last deep dive question, which we have for every single show. And that is, Eddie, what is your superpower? Whatever comes to your mind.
You know, it's so funny because I was an avid comic book collector as a kid. And there are so many, and now that you asked which one, I will say as a kid, and then my son, I seemed to pass on to him was super speed. He used to run around the backyard saying, "I'm Flash, I'm Quicksilver." And, you know, I think I used to do that too. And looking back, I don't know why the hell I wanted super speed. Why wouldn't I want invisibility or to fly? Or that super speed seemed really cool from the Flash comics that I used to read.
Eddie, that's cute. But for right now, like, what's your superpower as a human being, an adult male human being?
As adult male? You mean
yeah,
a real
superpower.
No,
a real one. Like, what's your real superpower?
I'm teasing. Real superpower. Oh, my goodness. I would like to think that we talked about emotional IQ. I would like to think that my superpower would be having some form of heightened emotional IQ that allows me to kind of understand and be empathetic to individuals and kind of be able to dig into issues, because I love talking about issues much more readily and quickly than the average layperson who wouldn't have that
superpower. That's true. Exactly. And you do have that superpower. I agree. I love that. That's great. That's great.
We
hope so.
Yes,
for sure.
We hope so.
Thank you. Thank you. And for everyone listening, we are going to take a little break for summer. We'll be back in the fall with new shows, and everyone be well.